Welcome to El Microscopio, a program exclusively dedicated to clinical chemistry and laboratory medicine. International Federation of Clinical Chemistry, IFCC. Executive Director, Dr. Hernan Ferris Tayeb.
Member of the Committee of Evidence-Based Laboratory Medicine of the International Federation of Clinical Chemistry.
Organizing Committee, Dr. Maria Montserrat Blanes Gonzalez from Paraguay, Dr. Rosa Isabel Sierra Amor from Mexico, and Dr. Estela Raimondo from Uruguay.
El Microscopio. A program exclusively dedicated to clinical chemistry.
El Microscopio, where health professionals can meet over the internet.
We are thankful to the audience. We have more than 100,300 Facebook likes. Let's go for more.
El Microscopio, a way of looking at knowledge.
The Spanish Association of Pharmaceutical Analysts and the Chilean Society of Clinical Chemistry accompany El Microscopio.
El Microscopio in Africa.
The African Federation of Clinical Chemistry is an organization of clinical chemistry societies on the African continent and a regional society of the IFCC. At present, the membership comprises the following 15 countries: Botswana, Egypt, Ethiopia,
Ghana, Kenya,
Malawi, Morocco, Nigeria, Rwanda, South Africa, Sudan, Tunisia,
Uganda, Zambia.
The aim of the AFCC is to promote improvement in the health wellness of the communities. It serves through improving the development and practice of clinical chemistry through education and scientific excellence and promote clinical chemistry in Africa. To date, academic exchange between Nigeria and South Africa has taken place. Areas of concern in clinical chemistry have been identified, and to this end, a quality management course has been organized. The clinical case study program provided by the AACC has been distributed to all AFCC's member countries, where it is being incorporated in the registrar training course.
El Microscopio in Africa.
Now we are going to hear the interview of Arthur Mancura.
Welcome back to Radio Africa. We now have in the studio Alfred Mancura, who is actually an intern in the Department of Pathology, and he's been focusing on HIV and hepatitis, co-infection and liver function profiles, and molecular characterization of hepatitis B. Welcome, Mr. Alfred Mancura.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Welcome, Mr. Henry.
Thank you very much.
Tell us briefly about what you're actually doing.
Okay. I've been working on the prevalence of HIV and hepatitis B co-infection and also molecular characterization of hepatitis B among HIV positive patients who were attending our OI clinics at Harare Hospital and the other one at Parenyato Group of Hospitals. So we determined the prevalence of HBV, and we found that about 6.4% of those patients were positive for hepatitis B. Then we also did some liver function profiles where we were testing for particular enzymes that are found in the liver. So we tested for aspartate aminotransferase, we tested for gamma-glutamate transferase, we tested for alanine transferase. So these are the enzymes that we're determining. And we found that most of the patients actually have some, they had liver disease. And also, after doing that, we had to do some molecular characterization of HBV in those who tested positive for HBV. And we managed to do about 17 samples for molecular characterization. And molecular characterization is whereby we'll be determining some particular genotypes of hepatitis B. And we found that of these genotypes, genotype A was the most prevalent among the HBV genotypes that we found. Molecular characterization actually helps us to help patients come up with good options in terms of therapeutic options that would help to treat them hepatitis B. So generally, that is what I was doing.
All right. So what were your findings and recommendations from all the research you've done?
Thank you. That's a good question. We found that 6.4 of the patients had hepatitis B. But also among these patients, about 78.2% were also once infected with the hepatitis B. They'd markers for which actually shows that these patients were once infected. Then this means that HBV vaccination is actually not optimal in Zimbabwe. So I would advise our policymakers to take this into consideration, like optimizing HBV vaccination and screening in the general population, and also probably to vaccinate the HIV-positive patients against HBV, depending on their CD4 count. And also HBV screening should form part of the routine testing that are done in HIV-positive patients, since we found 6.4 is actually a big number. Yeah. So.
Thank you very much, Mr. Alfred Makura. And Mr. Henry, you want to ask one final question?
One final question. Okay. So I want to say that if you are going to further your studies, how are you going to train maybe the younger people behind to maybe if you come into maybe to be in the teaching sector, how would you train them better?
Okay. What I'm doing right now, I'm working towards my master's in molecular medicine, which is also known as human genetics. So what I really want to do is maybe to engage the youngsters who are still doing the undergrad and teach them the importance of human genetics, and also maybe to teach them some new techniques that I would have learned from my master's.
Thank you so much, Mr. Alfred Makura, Mr. Henry, for being with us in this segment. We're actually looking at what Mr. Alfred Makura is doing. He's an intern in the Department of Pathology, and he's been focusing on HIV and hepatitis co-infection and liver function profiles and molecular characterization of hepatitis B. We will now take a short break. Do stay with us.
El Microscopio, where health professionals can meet over the internet.
Thank you.
This is El Microscopio on infobioquimica.com.
El Microscopio in the world, our correspondents in every country. Alberto Barrantes in Costa Rica. Álvaro Justiniano Gross in Bolivia. Ana Leticia Maselli in Guatemala. Carmen Cecilia Almonacid Urrego in Colombia. Cristina Cerveto from Uruguay. Eduardo Aranda in Chile. Graciela Velázquez from Paraguay. María del Carmen Pasquel from Ecuador.
The next IFTC World Lab Congress 2017 will be held in Durban, South Africa, on 22nd to 25th October 2017. It is hosted by the South African Association for Clinical Biochemistry and Laboratory Medicine.
Microscopio in Africa. Rajiv Erasmus is the president and chair. Tal Pillai is the chair of the scientific program of the IFTC World Lab Congress 2017.
El Microscopio.
El Microscopio.
A way of looking at knowledge.
El Microscopio in Africa.
With Lucy Chikinia Mabaya.
Welcome back to Internet Radio Africa. We are now honored to have in the studio Lucy Chikinia Mabaya, who is actually a PhD student who has done a research on kidney failure. Welcome, Lucy Chikinia Mabaya.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. We also have with us Henry. Welcome, Henry.
Pleasure to be with you.
Wonderful. So we need to know briefly exactly what you've been focusing on concerning kidney failure.
Thank you very much. Basically, my research was focused on acute kidney failure, trying to find better means of diagnosing the condition timelessly, which will actually contribute significantly to patient care and management. So in this research, I was exploring a new biomarker for diagnosis of acute renal failure, and the biomarker is neutrophil gelatinase-associated lipocalin. And in my findings, I can say this biomarker is very suitable for diagnosis of acute renal failure. And besides diagnosis, it was also able to predict the clinical outcome of the patients, which is the disease severity, which is dialysis. So any suitable biomarker for diagnosis should be able to identify the condition in time, and also should be able to identify those patients that need more specialized care in the case of renal replacement therapy. So this marker was very suitable.
Maybe I should also ask, what led you to choose this particular area for research?
Basically, I've got an interest when it comes to renal pathology and renal physiology. So I decided to look at new biomarkers that can be used for diagnosis, because I feel that those that are being currently used in clinical practice, they are not very suitable, but we are still using them. So there is need to explore other new biomarkers, and this really could really improve patient care and patient management.
Mm-hmm. So the current biomarkers that are being used are not efficient, according to your observations. What are the findings from your research?
From my research, I was looking at the routine renal function tests that are being used, the urea and the creatinine, and I was comparing with the neutrophil gelatinase. And for my findings, my new marker, the neutrophil gelatinase, actually was superior to creatinine and urea. It was able to detect the condition as soon as 24 hours just after the onset of this condition. But you find with creatinine, the levels were indicated pathology maybe a day later. So that's why I'll say neutrophil gelatinase is more suitable. And creatinine also, why I would say these other biomarkers, they are not very suitable. Creatinine, for example, you only notice an abnormal value in the lab after 50% of the glomerular filtration rate has decreased. In other words, after you've lost 50% of renal function. So it's actually late. It's not on time. Mm-hmm. And for urea, it's affected by a recent protein intake in the diet, because we're saying urea is found as the last product during the metabolism of proteins. So after a high protein meal, that would actually affect your urea levels in the blood. And you'd actually say maybe a patient has renal failure, and yet they don't have. It's just that they've just had a rich protein meal.
So what kind of challenges did you face as you were doing this kind of research?
Well, the first challenge was in terms of resources. My sample size was limited because I didn't have enough funds. I would have loved to actually do this research at global level, maybe looking at different provinces, but here I was limited to one central hospital, which is Parare Nyathwa Hospital. So I think the results could have been more interesting and even increase reliability. In science, replication increases the reliability of the results that you get. So if I had done it at national level, then the results could be more interesting.
Maybe before we come to your recommendations, let's hear Mr. Henry's comments.
All right. I wanted to ask about what other methods do you recommend in terms of this situation of the kidney failure?
What I would maybe recommend to the patient is as soon as you notice any abnormal clinical features, you need to report to the hospital. You need to see the doctor in time, because with renal failure, it's kind of silent. So you'd need to report in time. And there are also other markers with the like of beta 2 microglobulin. We also have ceruloplasmin that can also be used in diagnosis. So we should explore other markers, other proteins that can be used. We should not limit ourselves because science is always changing.
Okay. And then also, what else can you do in terms of the challenges faced, like in terms of the people in the current education system versus the new methods which you want to apply? How are you going to implement it if you are going to be successful in this project?
If you are going to be successful in this project, we would need to do research, to do trainings at national levels. Different laboratories would need to engage young scientists, would need to engage a lot of young scientists in the program, and more scientific conferences, to be more specific. If we hold more scientific conferences, that's when we can actually introduce this marker to people.
Maybe your final recommendations?
My final recommendations really would appeal to the government at large to support young scientists as we do medical research, especially when it comes to advancement of studies. Those that are going for master's programs, PhD programs, they need funding to do these advanced kind of research. So would really appreciate funding from the government and other even non-governmental organizations who can assist us.
Okay, maybe just tell us briefly about your PhD project.
My PhD project, I'm mainly looking at patients with bacterial meningitis. I'm looking at diagnosis of bacterial meningitis, other better methods that we can incorporate to what we currently have.
And what have you found out so far?
What I found out is that cryptococcal meningitis, because of HIV infection, cryptococcal meningitis is on the rise. So it needs to be actually detected in time. So we need to explore other ways of actually testing for this disease. And also what we found out in patients with cryptococcal meningitis infection, the drugs that are being used in treatment of these conditions, they're actually deadly. They actually affect the patient. They harm the patient. For example, amphotericin B, it actually causes renal failure. So we need better drugs.
Thank you very much, Lucy Chikinya.
Thank you.
in Africa.
This is El Necroscopio on infobiochimica.com.
El Necroscopio in the world, our correspondents in every country.
Rosa Isabel Sierra Amor from Mexico, Jose Jara from Peru, Milagros de la Rosa from Dominican Republic, Miriam Aguilera from Honduras, Rafael Calafel from Spain, Mario Chavez Villalobos from Costa Rica, Dante Janias from Bolivia, Leverton Ortiz from Chile.
El Microscopio in Africa.
The 14th International Congress of Pediatric Laboratory Medicine will also be held in Durban, South Africa, from the 20th to the 22nd October 2017. The IFCC World Lab Congress 2017. Scientific information, main topics, multi-omics and laboratory medicine, autoimmune disease, allergy, cardiovascular disease, bone and joint diseases, diabetes mellitus and metabolic syndrome, critical care, emergency medicine, genetic disease, endocrinology, hemostasis, hematology, laboratory errors and patient safety, infectious disease, liver and gastrointestinal diseases, laboratory management and information technology, oncology, urological disease, pharmacogenetics, pharmacogenomics, pediatric laboratory medicine, pregnancy and neonatology, point of care testing, renal function and injury, quality assessment, standardization, traceability, toxicology, drugs of abuse, technology, instrumentation and method evaluation, vitamins and nutrition, metabolomics.
Microscopio in Africa.
Now, in a Microscopio Africa, we're going to listen to Malawi Victor.
Well, this is Africa Radio, and we're actually looking at healthcare needs for Africa. And in this session, we're actually going to be concentrating on what Victor Makwinja, who's all the way from Malawi, has managed to do. Actually, he's preparing to go to Nigeria, where he's going to present his abstract. So we want to know briefly about your abstract. And in this interview, I'm also going to be having Henry. Henry, welcome.
Thank you, ma'am.
Hello. Welcome, Victor Makwinja.
Thank you very much.
So, Victor Makwinja, tell us briefly about the work that you have submitted in Nigeria.
I did a research back in the university where I was in Malawi. I looked at practices in terms of care, use, and management of medical laboratory equipment at 4 central laboratories in Malawi. The idea was to find out the challenges that people who are working in the lab face in terms of use and how they care for the medical laboratory equipment, because these factors have an influence or would affect how service is delivered to patients in terms of laboratory services.
Yep. Which is wonderful. So what exactly have you proposed? Have you made any recommendations in this abstract?
The recommendations are there because from what I discovered in the research, most of the equipment that you will find in most African hospitals are donor-funded. And that, in most cases, is dependent upon projects that are, you know, that donors would influence to carry out, maybe for a specific period of time. But government does not take a position to work with the donors in one way or the other to maintain the issues of management, care, and the other issues to do with the equipment after the projects have gone. So the recommendations I made is government should take full responsibility, though donors would come in at some point, but should take full responsibility to take care of the equipment, because that would help them to take the...
Maybe before I let Henry speak, I just wanted to know, what do you really think was the challenge that was posed by the way equipment was being handled initially? What were the major challenges that you saw?
The major challenge is, from what I did research on, one, there are issues of purchases or procurement. There are no proper procedure or policies that would lead you to understand how things are procured. And then another one is to do with donations. Organizations just donate equipment to hospitals without putting into mind how that equipment can be cared for, because if you just purchase and donate an equipment, you need to make sure that you have put in structures and mechanisms to keep on supporting the equipment in terms of consumables, because that's what will keep the equipment going. So in most cases, they would just buy the equipment, put it there, and then the responsibility to support the equipment remains with the hospital. Now, oftentimes, you don't have budgets that are prepared for such an equipment because it wasn't in the budget of the hospital. It was in the budget of the donor. So the donor, in most cases, was supposed to take full control within the period that they would be supporting the equipment. But no, in most cases, that's not the case. So the recommendation, those are the challenges that I found, procurement issues, donation issues, but also involvement of the people who are using the equipment, which is also a critical factor, because if you don't involve people who are daily using the equipment to understand the challenges that they face, when you are doing another set of purchase, you would always come to the very same mistakes. So it would be interesting to involve people who are using the equipment, understand the complexity, the environment in which the equipment is used, how many challenges they face each on a daily basis, and what could be the best way to approach in addressing the problems. That would help in another set of procurement, so that you don't have the very same problem that the equipment users faced in the first place on the equipment that they are using.
So hospitals had actually been facing a problem of improper procedures for procurement of equipment, and there were actually donation issues, and then there was actually maybe limited involvement of the people who are daily using the equipment, and maybe also their training was lacking big time. Mr. Henry?
Yes, improper procedures comes in the effect that people may not be trained properly in the first place. So what we need to train people, meaning that they have to know how the equipment actually works step by step from start to end, so that at the end of the day, you can get the required results. Sometimes the donors, depending on the manuals they give, maybe people may be trained in different institutions. For example, maybe the different degree programs around Africa in general. And we might say, maybe they might vary here and there. But they must come at least once to meet. That's why, like, for example, the previous conferences, which can be done, and maybe you can talk about Durban, which is coming, the conference, right? The purpose is to teach people and to make sure that they upgrade their skills. We are not saying that people don't know what they are doing, but we are saying that we need at least a standardized way of doing things. And even the type of equipment, they must be advanced so that we can actually get what we really want. And they must be relevant and tally to the environment specifically. Because you see, even some diseases, they might sound similar, but if you go to the next country, you see that there are different strains and conditions. So also storage, even if you are storing, you need to teach them how to store properly. You need to teach them how to handle the equipment. Because the equipment break down, the person must know in the laboratory how best they can do, who to contact, whom to what. And thank you.
Thank you very much. So if health equipment is taken well care of, that will improve healthcare delivery systems in many African hospitals. That's what you believe, Mr. Victor Makwinja?
Exactly. And you see, if we do that, we would improve our healthcare system very much. But the current status is people who use the equipment, they don't really know, as my brother said, they don't really know much about the equipment. So they use it just because it is there in the hospital or in the lab. But if they are properly trained, it means they would know when to do what. And the way when they know when to do what, they'll be able to take great care of it. And that would last for years, because in most cases, equipment would have a lifetime of 10 years. But in most African countries, the first 2 years is down. And another challenge which I also needed to mention is to do with the technical people who would want to come and fix the machine once it is down. Basically, there are also challenges in terms of technicians who can maintain equipment. So you'd need, like in many cases, the countries do not have in-house or in-country technicians. You will always have people from other countries to come into other countries to fix equipment. Like, for example, people would come from Zimbabwe into Malawi to fix an equipment. Now, that takes time. If an equipment is down today, you may expect that in the next 3 or 4 weeks is when the technician will come and fix. It means service delivery has stopped at that point, and that would affect how patients would receive care in the hospital. So if we put in structures to train people in-house, but also in-country, that would also help much in terms of equipment management, but also how patients receive care in service delivery.
Are we saying that we've got adequate provision of equipment and our only problem as Africa is improper use?
I would say adequate improvision of equipment. We might go back to the fact, as I said before, that even if you have the most advanced equipment and you don't have trained staff, we have done nothing. So in other words, we need to put quality control procedures inside. And to quality control, it means that the person who has manufactured the equipment, they must somehow has to guide us on how to use it. We may be misguided by saying like the whole responsibility is to the hospital, but actually the person of that equipment is not really that involved 100%. So that's where the problem is. We need to be all involved. It is everyone's problem, and we must work as one team.
It is everyone's problem, and we must all work as one team. It's been a pleasure having you in this interview, Mr. Victor Makwinja. Maybe one final word from you.
Yes. Just to add on what you said, in Africa, sometimes we have very complex equipment that comes into. But if you look at our healthcare system, if we address problems at a primary care level, we can deal with a lot of challenges that would feed into secondary level or tertiary level of our healthcare systems. So at the primary level, you don't need complex equipment. You need basic equipment that can quickly diagnose disease, and then patient management begins at that point. But oftentimes we wait for the disease to get complex, and then we leave for the patient to a secondary or tertiary level to get, you know, that level of treatment. But if we were able to get basic equipment at the primary level, we would address a lot of our disease problem in countries in Africa. So my last word would be, it is very proper for us to sit down, analyze our healthcare delivery systems, and then be able to go at a primary level and find basic equipment that would help at that point. WHO has written a lot of papers on that one, on how, it has defined equipment that can be used at the primary level, at the secondary level, and at the tertiary level. So if we follow such kind of guidelines, we'll be able to deal with the problem of equipment management, but also patient outcomes in terms of disease management.
Thank you very much, Mr. Victor Makwinja, who is actually all the way from Malawi. He is the president for the Association of Medical Laboratory Sciences in Malawi. And it's been a pleasure having him in this interview as he presented to us the abstract that he has done concerning lab equipment. And he thinks that if we are going to take better care of equipment and use proper procedures when purchasing this equipment, that can actually go a long way in improving healthcare delivery systems in Africa. And we were also privileged to have Mr. Henry, who is actually here from Zimbabwe. Thank you so much, Mr. Henry, for also being here and for providing those very pivotal recommendations. We will now take a short break. Do stay with us.
O microscópio. Eu te preciso.
badula mitabo ipo mane kota sana mana ladu kuka maybe together you and me mikubo bokuni mitabo yo tutu ye ayaye ye I know you can understand me maybe should just together forever.
Find further information? We upload news about publications, websites, and institutions.
News. Abstracts of free contributions covering the field of clinical chemistry, clinical molecular biology, and laboratory medicine in the broader sense can be submitted. Preference for poster oral presentation should be indicated at the time of submission, since the poster sessions as well as oral presentations of scientific contributions from participants will be arranged. Abstracts can only be submitted via the internet. Deadline for abstract submission is 15 May 2017. IATC World Lab Congress 2017. Why Durban? Located in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, Durban is South Africa's self-styled playground, where year-round warm weather encourages visitors to make the most of the province's outdoors lifestyle. Culturally, Durban exhibits a mix of Indian, Zulu, and post-colonial influences reflected in the city's architecture and cuisine. Durban has a humid subtropical climate, with hot and humid summers and pleasantly warm and dry winters, which are frost-free. This is South Africa's top domestic holiday destination, and whether it is adventure or relaxation you seek, Durban makes for unforgettable experiences.
Emicoscopio
in Africa. Uchamiso Mutebedza.
Welcome back. We now have in the studio Shamiso Mutembeza, who's actually a laboratory scientist at Premier Services Medical Investments, which is under clinical laboratories. She's actually geared to go for continuous development in the area of breast cancer, but now we are focusing on her abstract. Shamiso, maybe before you speak to us, Mr. Henry, welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome, Shamiso.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Tell us briefly about your abstract.
My abstract was on the effect of antiretroviral treatment
on nephropathy development in HIV-positive pediatrics who are attending the OI clinic at the Parenyatwa group of hospitals. So basically I was trying to look at the effect of those antiretrovirals on the kidney function of those children, and I was using serum creatinine and cystatin C and urine microalbumin as my markers to then determine the effect of the drugs on the kidney function in the children. So what I found from that was that basically microalbumin is the one that's the best, it's best at detecting kidney failure in children. It's an early marker of kidney failure. But then serum creatinine and cystatin C develop later. So you are only able to then see the effects later when it has already affected the child. So I'll advise that maybe urine microalbumin be a regular test that's done for kids to then screen them for kidney function, for kidney failure, especially those that are on ART treatment.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So to what extent do you want to put this project into implementation use?
I'd want for kids when they usually attend the OI clinic, I would want for the tests that are requested for that, they also request for microalbumin so that they then check the kidney function of the children when they come for their regular visits, so that they see if there's any effect on the kidney function of the children when they come.
Mm-hmm. How do you suppose that will impact healthcare provision in Africa?
I think it will be a very positive effect, because at least it will reduce the cases of kidney dysfunction in children and lower the rate of children with kidney failure.
Thank you very much, Shamiso Mutembeza, and Mr. Henry, of course. Shamiso Mutembeza is actually a lab scientist at Premier Services Medical Investment under Clinical Laboratories, and she's been doing an abstract on the effect of antiretroviral treatment on nephropath development in HIV-positive pediatrics who were actually attending the IO clinic at Parenyatwa group of our hospitals. Thank you so much, Shamiso. We will now take a short break. Do stay with us.
El Microscopio, Agenda, offering courses, workshops, seminars, congresses.
Agenda, Medical Symposium 2016 in Harare, Zimbabwe, on December the 14th, 2016. International Congress on Quality in Laboratory Medicine in Helsinki, February the 9th to February the 10th, 2017.
Agenda.
The Winter School Advanced Cytometry Applications in Immunology at Saint-Étienne in France, March the 6th to March the 10th, 2017.
Agenda.
The 4th EFLM BT European Conference on Pre-Analytical Phase, Improving Quality in the Pre-Analytical Phase through Innovation in Amsterdam, Netherlands, on March 24th to March 25th, 2017.
Agenda.
The 7th Baltic Transfusion Medicine Congress and the 1st Latvian Congress in Laboratory Medicine in Riga, May the 11th to May the 13th, 2017.
Agenda.
The EuroMedLab Athens 2017 Satellite Meeting, Management of Inborn Errors of Metabolism from Diagnosis to Treatment, Athens, Greece, June the 10th, 2017.
Agenda.
The EuroMedLab Athens 2017 Satellite Meeting, Metabolic Bone Disease, the Role of Clinical Laboratory in Athens, Greece, June the 10th, 2017.
Agenda.
EuroMedLab Athens 2017 Satellite Meeting, Diabetes in Athens, Greece, June the 15th, 2017.
This is El Microscopio on infobiochimica.com.
El Microscopio in the world. Our correspondents in every country. Stella Raimondo from Uruguay. Fernando Ruiz Cerda from Chile. Montserrat González from Paraguay. Isabel Fierro from Ecuador. José Francisco Valle from Mexico. Oswaldo Ruiz Narváez from Costa Rica. Patrocinio Chuecas from Spain. Rodolfo Aquino Cáceres from El Salvador.
Microscopio in Africa. We continue with El Microscopio in Africa with an interview to Professor Ilza Matavira.
Welcome back. In this segment, we are honored to have in the studio Professor Hilda Tendisa Marima Matarira, who actually is the Secretary of the African Federation of Clinical Chemistry and Laboratory Medicine, and she's also the President of Zimbabwe Association of Clinical Biochemistry and Laboratory Medicine, and she's the representative in the country on the International Federation of the Clinical Chemistry and Laboratory Medicine. And as we celebrate the launch of Africa Radio Laboratory Medicine, which was actually launched on the 16th of June in 2016. And in this segment, we're also honored to have the co-producer, who is Mr. Henry Marongo. Mr. Henry Marongo, let me welcome you first.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Wonderful. We now have the honor to hear from our Professor Hilda Tendisa Marima Matarira about this great work on Africa Radio Lab Medical Radio.
Faith and Henry, I am so proud that the initiative of the Zimbabwe Association of Clinical Biochemistry and Laboratory Medicine, which was adopted by the African Federation of Clinical Chemistry and Laboratory Medicine, is coming to be a practical child being born on the African continent. As you recall, we launched Africa Radio Laboratory Medicine on the 16th of June 2016 at the Harare International Conference Center with Professor Howard Morris, who was with us there. And he has now since been elected president-elect of the International Federation of Clinical Chemistry and Laboratory Medicine, starting his term in January 2017. He celebrated with us the ZACB through a congress, a national congress, where the African Federation of Clinical Chemistry and Laboratory Medicine was represented by young scientists on the value of integrating micronutrients in medicine. And various resolutions were passed, which are now being implemented. Out of this June congress, we have 10 publications which have gone on to the IFCC, AFCC, Medical Laboratory and Clinical Scientists Council, the New Testimony News, the El Microscopio, our collaborating partner on Africa Radio Laboratory Medicine. They have published extensively. And the ZACB official journal, which is the Journal of Biomedical Sciences and Public Health. There's been massive interest in the role of trace elements and micronutrients, which is one of the ZACB new innovative approach to managing largely the infectious disease and cancers, which have a high mortality and morbidity in Africa. Then now we are celebrating the 6th Association of Clinical Chemistry of Nigeria Congress, which is running in Lagos from the 12th to the 14th of October, with a ZACB scientific mini conference in Harare, with four young scientists who are going to be showing their best on the researches which they've done. But we are honored to have the president of the Malawi Association of Clinical Biochemistry, who is a representative of the Malawi young scientists, also to present on what Malawi is doing and he personally is doing and how he's continuously developing himself. I am very, very proud today that also since 16th of June 2016, I'm meeting the first producers of Africa Internet Radio in Laboratory Medicine. These are Faith Nyarambi and Henry Maronga, representing the Cool Bright Internet Services, who are linked to El Microscopio as ZACB collaborating partners in the African Initiative, where we hope to share, communicate, inform, educate Africa in laboratory medicine and laboratory science and the IFCC and worldwide. I am so proud to be interviewed today by the core staff who are also the initiators in practical terms today, making sure that the child born on the 16th of June is a child who can now implement. Thank you.
So what are the future trends about the foundations and the how are you going to continue in terms of the development of the IFCC?
The future of the Africa Radio Internet services is that we, Africa, will publish more. We will tell the African story as it happens on the continent. We will reach out through internet services. And Faith and Henry, you will develop the radio stations, maybe with other new ideas to reach out. We know that the Africans use cell phones, smartphones. Over 90% of the population in Africa, and maybe 100% worldwide, use smartphones. So there is room for major development of sharing, informing, collaborating, communicating, and coordinating events, activities, and science and knowledge in laboratory medicine.
Yes, indeed. We share the excitement in the actual initiation of this brilliant idea on the Africa Internet Radio for Laboratory Medicine. And we are looking at what kind of impact you're anticipating.
I look at the impact on public health, not just in Africa, which is 1.2 billion, but the whole world, which has over 7 billion population. The first important, very important management tool in controlling diseases is knowledge. Once we arm the populations with knowledge, we'll be able to reduce, prevent disease, because the disease burden is a very big drain on the national economies. In Africa, the infections and cancers, we want to know that early detection of disease can improve death rates, which are unusually high. They contribute over 70 to 80% of world mortalities in infectious disease and cancer. And once we reduce these diseases, we hope the life expectancy on the African continent will massively improve. Do you know that the life expectancy out of Africa now is in the 80s and 90s, while in Africa is around 40s and 50s in the majority of countries. We want Africans also to benefit from their natural resources and pass on all their skills and experiences with time to the younger generation, so that we are moving as a continent in development and meet the United Nations and the sustainable goals in all sectors.
Yes, indeed. So this Africa Internet Radio for Laboratory Medicine will go a long way in improving public health in Africa, as people are empowered with knowledge on disease prevention, and the life expectancy for Africa can hopefully rise from the 40s where it's currently sitting at to above 80 where other continents are sitting at. It's been a pleasure having Professor Hilda Tendisa Marima Matarira in this segment, who is the Secretary of the African Federation for Clinical Laboratory and Laboratory Medicine, and she He's also the president for Zimbabwe Association of Clinical Biochemistry and Lab Medicine, who is the representative for the country in the International Federation of Clinical Lab Medicine. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us in this segment. We will now take a short break. Do stay with us.
In Africa. September 77, Port Elizabeth. Weather fine was business as usual in police room 619. Oh, Biko. Oh, Biko. Yilamaja, the man is dead, the man is dead.
Thank you.
are risking their lives.
Microscopio. Infobiochimica.com. El Microscopio.